Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
What's up, Tar Heel fans? This is Taylor Vipolis, and you are listening to my podcast on the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. And before we get started today, I just want to say thank you for listening or watching. If you're on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a rating and review. It's something that we at Inside Carolina would appreciate, and it hardly takes any time. Also, be sure to subscribe so you never miss any of the shows or content we put out. Now let's get to why you're here today. For people who are watching, you could see who's with me. We've got the legend, Sherelle McMillan, as the resident recruiting expert. I thought it would be fun to bring Rel on and take a look back at recruiting at Carolina with some superlatives when it comes to basketball. So, Rel, first off, you know, thanks for joining me. And second, you know, can you just kind of explain to me and the listeners, like, when you got started with recruiting and you know, how long you've kind of been doing this for?
Yeah, so first off, for anyone who's watching on YouTube, I want to apologize for ruining, you know, the image that you might have me in your head. So this is me. So yeah, I was an undergraduate student some time ago at North Carolina and released a story about AIM, AOL Instant Messenger. So there's this guy who I had been following his website, uncbasketball.com at the time. And his username was Ben at UR, is the school he went to. And it was Ben Sherman. And I just was like, hey, man, what's up? Enjoy your recruiting stuff. Pretty awesome. You know, just being really awkward and angsty teenager. So he eyed me back and he was like, yeah, we go to tournaments, blah, blah, blah. And we started talking. And from there, we went to a tournament. Actually, the last one before Inside Carolina was created in 2001. We were at the Peach Jam in Augusta. And Ben was taking phone calls from people during that. He was trying to keep it secret from us. Because, you know, we didn't really know each other that well at that point. And so since then I've been with IC. So that's 19 long years ago.
Just a few.
That's how.
Yeah, that's an interesting background, but you know, before we get started with the superlatives, just a few ground rules I think that are worth mentioning for the listeners is that this will only be about commits that came to UNC. So it resonates more with the fan base. And also these superlatives will be from at the time of their commitment and during their recruiting process, and unless otherwise stated by, you know, one of us. And, you know, Rel, going back to your earlier days, like you just mentioned, who was the first commit that you can remember covering?
Covering, like as a serious capital J journalist or whatever, was probably Harrison Barnes. But from working as a correspondent or whatever with IC, he was probably Raymond Felton or Rashad McCants, one of those two. That first summer that I was out on the trail was the year that they were coming up, entering their senior year. So that was the class with Sheldon Williams and JJ Redick and Raymond Felton, Rashad McCants, Sean May, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a really good class to kind of learn about recruiting with.
And where I got this idea from originally was the Kerwin Walton commitment thread, which went on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages. And it got me thinking, you know, like if this is happening now, I have to imagine the fans have done something to this level before. So who gets the superlative for best message board thread centered around a commit?
Yeah, that Kerwin Walton thread was a little fishy for those who were in it for the entire weekend. I know. Harrison Barnes, for sure. It was crazy because, you know, he was a lock for Duke and then he wasn't. And anytime you talk about Duke and Carolina, when it comes to recruiting, things get a little crazy. And I don't think really anybody believes necessarily, like people thought that Carolina led and Kendall Marshall did a great job kind of recruiting him along with the staff. But I don't know if anybody really, really thought deep down that he was going to come to Carolina. And it just, I don't know. I think back then there was a thread limit of like 50 pages. And I think there was like a few of them with the 50 pages. And just the amount of craziness involved with that one. I mean, there were serious ramifications for some people, but for a lot of people, it was just kind of jokes and fun games. But that one was pretty crazy because it lasted. It wasn't as long as someone like Seventh Woods, where we knew when he was a freshman in high school, all the way up until signing day of a senior. But it was so bright from like, you know, that April until he decided that November. It was just craziness.
And who gets the superlative for best communicator? So if you want to get in touch with this person for an article or maybe for a scoop, they're going to give you the information you want in a timely fashion.
Gosh, as a recruit, I mean, I don't want to be cliche, but it's got to be Marcus Page. I mean, he was just like, there is a naivety that comes with, you know, becoming a high school basketball player and becoming someone who's known nationally. And there's a process of them losing that over the course of reporters calling them and coaches calling them. And Marcus never seemed to lose that. Like, you could call him. A story I'll tell, we were at the Jordan Brand All-Star Game. Back then, I think this is 2012. So it's like spring of 2012. It was in Charlotte. And Paige was injured. And, you know, JP Tokoto was there. And I think Bryce Johnson was there as well. And I was trying to get something together with the entire class. And so JP was like, hey, man, why don't you call Marcus, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know, I don't want to bother him. He's injured. He really wanted to be here. I'm at it's Time Warner Arena or Spectrum Center now. I'm at Time Warner Arena then. And I just go to the concourse and call Marcus Page. And he talks on the phone for like 25 minutes. He gives articulate answers, talks about how ready he is to come to Carolina, talks about his teammates, gives like a scouting report on all of them. Just, I mean, just that kind of thing where it went from not being able to talk to him to being on the concourse during the game, talking to him for 25 minutes. So I have to go with Page.
Who is on the opposite end of that, the worst communicator, maybe in terms of, you know, they're just not responding to any message you are sending out?
Oh, it was Seventh Woods. I think it's not particularly close just because he didn't, the way his family structured his recruitment, he didn't really talk unless you got him. You know, I went down to a small AAU tournament one May at like 9:30 a.m. just to try to get Seventh. There was no one else of interest in that game. We drove down to Columbia, we got there, and then they were like, yeah, he's not talking today. So it was just that kind of way with him. You had to go through his mom and his dad and his AAU coach, who now we're, you know, I'm really good friends with, even after Seventh is gone. But, you know, it was hard to get Seventh on the phone or any contact with him at all.
Who gets the superlative for best parents, ones that, you know, were your favorite to talk to? I know it's tough trying to narrow it down because you might like a lot of parents, but if you're pressed to give the best parent award, who's it going to?
I'm going to cheat, so I'll go ahead and tell you that now. So I'll give three. So Kennedy Meeks's aunt, Brenda Richmond, is great. Got to know her very well, friends to this day. Texted with her not long ago, actually. Just really all about, you know, making sure that Kennedy was taken care of and make sure that people were, she didn't mind people talking to him. She just wanted him to know what they were talking about. And I think that's perfectly reasonable for your, you know, 17, 18 year old. And then Harold Little, the Little family in general, but mostly Harold, again, someone who I'm friends with now, even after Nasir is gone, you know, send pictures of my kids to him, you know, just check in with them. And then Sharon and Lloyd Jackson as well. Same thing. You know, they move past people you have connections with via recruiting to just, you know, kind of lifelong friends. And so same thing with Lloyd and Harold. Like I said, I talked to them not long ago and sent them pictures of my kids. So really great relationships with those people.
That's cool to hear that you have relationships with these parents even after their sons move on. And moving to one of the more fun categories, best hair.
Kobe, it's Kobe. It's that's easy, right? I mean,
his hair, in there.
Yeah, his hair evolved too. You know, it wasn't always, he always had long hair, but it wasn't what it is now. Like, he's got a lot of hair now. But even the first time me and Ben saw him play, we were like, you know, it's this guy. At the time, it was unclear. So we're talking about him in high school, not what he turned out to be. But we're like, is this kid, you know, someone who Carolina can really offer as a point guard? And the first time we ever saw him play, I promise you, it was in Hampton, Virginia. We're at an AAU game, 16 and under, CP3 is playing. Kobe gets the ball, you know, flying up and down the court, like his hair is flopping and everything. And he goes for a layup and like hits the support and is out for the game. I don't know if he was concussed. I don't know what happened, but it was just like, wow, this kid goes really hard, because that was the only thing we saw him do that entire game. I just remember his hair kind of flopping up and down. For those listening, I'm motioning my hands up and down. I remember his hair flopping like that. So I have to go with Kobe for hair.
Who are you giving the superlative for best recruiter in terms of once they were committed, they were getting others on board?
So I'll give you two. I think second place was, I think Kennedy always did a good job of hosting people. There's the famous night with Andrew Wiggins in Chapel Hill where, like, Kennedy is on Twitter, I think, or somewhere, like, hey, where's the party? We want to bring Andrew Wiggins to the party to get him to come to Carolina. But there's a lot of people I've talked to over the years who said, you know, just having him around, he's kind of goofy, really funny, but also could be serious. They really liked him that way. And then it's kind of ironic because now he's director of recruiting for UNC basketball, but I think Kendall Marshall is probably the best. And not just because of Paris and Barnes, but again, the way he played, his play was part of it too. So the way he played and then his personality, I think people naturally gravitate towards him. So between playing style and how he just was as a person, how early he committed to Carolina, I think all of that made him a really effective recruiter for not just his class in 2010, but he was already committed when John Henson and all those guys committed in 2009, because he committed, I believe it was his September of his sophomore year. So he was a really, really early commit. And so he had been working, you know, classes all the way from 09 to like 12 almost. So that's how impactful he was, just because he was committed for so long.
Who gets the superlative for best highlight tape?
Seventh Woods. I mean, incredible. I'm not sure. I don't understand, you know, how he went from where he was to what he did at Carolina, you know, injury, circumstance, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, his mixtape was just, it was just incredible. No one really ever seen anything like that. I was at the game. Inside Carolina was at the game that really propelled him to national prominence. It was at the Chick-fil-A Classic in Columbia, South Carolina. I think this is probably 2014, maybe 2015, 14 or 15. Anyway, he comes on the court and just like jumps over a guy and dunks on him. And the crowd erupts, and it's number one on SportsCenter. And, you know, I think about 3 months later is when the mixtape dropped. And just the guy was doing incredible things athletically. And we just never got to see that at UNC for whatever reason. But his mixtape is still the stuff of legends. You go back and look at it, you'd be like, man, this kid has to be in the NBA right now. But, you know, he's entering his senior year at South Carolina.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw, like, Seventh Woods' highlight tape. I think it was, like, he was in, like, eighth or ninth grade, and I was like, this might be the best player I've ever seen.
Yeah, everybody was like, okay, there's, you know, Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Magic, Seventh. Like, because it was just, he was so far ahead of everyone else. And maybe that's probably the issue, is that he was just, his body matured faster athletically and everything. But it was just incredible to watch, man.
Who gets the superlative for best to watch live?
Best to watch live. That's tough. I'll go Harrison Barnes, just because so when people talk about LeBron James, I promise I'm going to get to the point. When we talk about LeBron James, it's always that, you know, he entered the NBA with as much hype, you know, maybe as anyone ever. And not only has he, you know, kind of lived up to it, but he's really surpassed the hype that he had, which is almost an impossible task. So when we first went to see Harrison Barnes, this is, I guess this is 2009, like April 2009. Yeah, April 2009, I think is when it was. Me and Ben, we're in Hampton. We're at the Boo Williams facility. It's a Friday night. Yeah, I think he has the second game, maybe the second or third game. And our expectations have just been, you know, built up so high that it's like, Harrison Barnes is phenomenal. This kid is going to be number one in the class. He's the future. He's Carmelo 2.0, et cetera, et cetera. And not only did he come out, he was playing for Howard Pooley, was his team out of Minnesota. He came out and he just dominated. I mean, he was as advertised. And to me, whenever you can match the hype that's associated with you, that's when I'm really impressed. And all the pressure as someone who's the presumptive number one player in the class, and with Duke and Carolina and everybody offering, and he delivered that Friday night with a team that frankly wasn't that great. So to me, that's one of the more impressive performances we've seen.
Yeah, it's always interesting to hear about HB being the number one player in the class, and I know fans are going to love hearing you recount your stories of watching him play. But who would you give the superlative for best shooter, best pure shooter?
Best pure shooter. Well, the easy answer would be to go straight to Wayne Ellington, right? But I didn't, honestly, I didn't see him in AAU a ton. That's a tough one for a few reasons, because all the guys, you know, they had stretches in different games. Like Bobby Frazier had that incredible weekend in Houston. We weren't there for that, but he had that incredible weekend. There were times where Ty Lawson, even though he didn't become like a great shooter until he was a junior, where he was, you know, phenomenal. But I think Justin Jackson, for me, and I know he's kind of recent, but it seemed like he was making everything, and he always made everything in AU. And obviously he didn't, but it felt that way because that floater, you know, 6'7", 6'8", just nobody in high school who could defend it. And it was kind of like, if he got past you, it didn't have to be a jump shot, but if he got past you, then the floater was going to go in. So I'll go him, but I don't feel quite as confident on that one as some of the others. So I'll take that back. So Jackson, most recent, Rashad McCants, maybe ever. Kid could just shoot. I mean, he always could shoot. And it looked so easy to him. Like he was just kind of, for those listening, I'm just throwing my hands up in the air. It's just like he was just kind of, you know, throwing the ball to the rim and would always go in. So maybe those two.
Now, we covered shooting. Who gets a superlative for best dunker?
Oh, man. In-game or overall?
You could split it.
In-game, I think I'll go with Bryce. We saw Bryce at the Peach Jam. I guess this was 2011, maybe, like July 2011. And, like, everything he did was a dunk. It was phenomenal. It was on court one, so you walk in the facility, you go to your right. And the team wasn't very good. It was a CP3 team. It wasn't their best year. But everything Bryce did was either a block or a dunk, I think. So that always stuck in my mind. But overall, I think it's JP Tokoto. I mean, he could do some things just because of his vertical leap and his athleticism. You know, it always didn't translate to the court, but he was a phenomenal dunker. Seventh is up there, but he couldn't do, you know, some. He just kind of had the right hand tomahawk. That was kind of what he could do mostly. But JP could kind of do everything.
That's who I, in my mind, JP, yeah. That's who I thought you would go with. But, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break here so I can remind everyone about Johnny T-Shirt. As a small, locally owned business in Chapel Hill, Johnny T-Shirt needs your support now more than ever. They've got everything you could want when it comes to Carolina apparel, and they always have the best prices, so it's a win-win for Carolina fans, especially with Father's Day around the corner. Now is the perfect time to start stocking up on more Carolina gear because – as we know, Carolina fans, they can't get enough Carolina gear. And don't forget, Inside Carolina premium subscribers save 10% off their orders.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, Rael, getting back to the superlatives, who is the tallest commit that you can remember covering?
I think it's Walker Kessler, who's a 2020 signee, because all the other guys were, you know, 6'10", 6'11". I think Joel James was 7 foot, but he's someone who we never really got to see him play AAU. We had to, you know, go through Evan Daniels and Brian Snow, some of the national guys. So I think it's Walker Kessler. Like, we went down to his high school and did like a feature story on him back in November. And doing this for a while, you get used to kind of how tall basketball players are. Like, I think people don't realize someone like Steve Kerr is a giant, even though he looks small on TV, like he's huge. And so he's 6'4", maybe. And so I walked into the gym, and I'm short. I'm like 5'8 and a half on a good day, you know, with stilts on. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I walk into the gym, and I see Walker Kessler, and I just kind of again, for those listening, I'm looking up at this guy. I'm just looking at him like you know, this guy's huge. Like, he's just massive. And I think he's up to like 7'1.5", 7'2" now.
Wow.
So I think he's the tallest player we've covered since I've been doing this.
Wow. I can't wait to see him out on the court just with that height, because for high school basketball, we were playing DeMatha this year, and I remember just going into gyms, like, it was always normal seeing kids that are like in the 6'7", 6'8" range, kind of like you mentioned. And then the Michigan commit, Hunter Dickinson, walked in, and I was like, this might be one of the biggest kids I've ever seen.
Massive guy.
So I'm looking forward to seeing Kessler on the court. But on the opposite end of that, who is the shortest commit that you can remember?
You know, I think it's Ty Lawson. It's either him or Joel Berry. I think Ty might be a little shorter than Joel. But yeah, I think it's Ty Lawson. And he obviously did fine in college. So
Ty Lawson or Joel Berry, those are two guys who – left with national championships. So we got to start recruiting that height.
They need more 5'10", 5'11 point guards. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Who is the superlative going to for the earliest commitment that you can recall?
I think it's Kendall. He committed I'm pretty sure it's September or October of his sophomore year. So he was class of 2010. So that would have been like September of 08, maybe. I think that's right. Forgive my math. Anyway, it was a long, long time. Because, you know, back in the day, he did a commitment, like, diary with IC. We could probably go back and find that somewhere. Commitment journal. Mm. We could probably go back and find it somewhere. And there's, like, years of entries in there talking about, you know, how he switched schools and his, you know, his train ride, you know, across town and how long it took and just how he's trying to develop as a player. So pretty sure he had the earliest commitment. You know, just after his freshman, at the very beginning of his sophomore season.
That journal is something I didn't know about, because I only started following Carolina basketball and once I got accepted to the school. Well, I knew of Carolina basketball and Carolina was my favorite team, but I wasn't following recruiting or keeping up with all that stuff. So that's something I'm definitely going to keep. I'm writing down for people who, aren't watching on YouTube. That's something I have to check out later. But who was the biggest surprise in terms of commitment?
So I'm going to cheat again because there's so many players. It's just hard. But I'd say Brandon Wright was probably number one because – and that, you talk about crazy matches were threads. But there's a poster that Sunday morning. So the way things work after official visits is we start to, like, talk to people close to the situation on both sides and try to – gather us some information so we can at least do a, hey, this is how the visit went. You know, they typically say, oh, it went great and everything was fine. And then we try to dig deeper as the day goes along before we talk to the kid or, you know, the parent or a coach or anything. And so that Sunday morning, I think a poster, forgive me y'all if I get it wrong, but I think it was Marlon Davis is the poster's name. And it's just like, Brandon Wright is going to Carolina. Mark it down, book it, it's done. And at the time, but we talked about the Carolina Duke dynamic, everyone assumed that he was going to go to Duke and Carolina was a long shot and they had a better chance of getting, you know, Thad Young or Kevin Durant or whoever. And, you know, lo and behold, Brandon Wright committed not longer. And so the, you know, for a long time, you know, Marlon Davis is a name. People, the fact that I remember a message board poster's name from, what was that, 14 years ago, should tell you just how how much of a surprise it was. And then I'll go to Walker Kessler, again, against Duke, the presumptive favorite. He barely got home and announced a commitment. Now, part of it was that he didn't really get to do it the way he wanted because of some other factors, but just the fact that he went from everyone telling us Auburn Duke, Auburn Duke, Auburn Duke, to him visiting UNC, him getting on the road, driving home for 6 hours. And by the time really, they said basically by the time he got on 85, he was like, yeah, I'm going to Carolina, you know, from the Smith Center. And then by 10 o'clock that night, it was announced and he was a Carolina commitment. So I think those two are the biggest surprises. And Puff would be a distant third, but that was a big surprise to a lot of people.
Pulling back the curtain a little, how often does a commitment catch you off guard like that where – do you have any instances where, you know, you're out and about and somebody commits and you're like, I have to get home right now to cover this?
Yeah. So I'll give you some behind the scenes, how the sausage is made type deal. So I guess this is about a year ago. We were at Well, I was in Atlanta at the Peach Jam, or sorry, I'm getting everything confused. I was in Atlanta at the first session of Nike's EYBL. And at the game, we're looking for some players, trying to figure out where the coaching staffs are and everything. And I get a call from someone, and it's like, hey, I'll go ahead and say it. It's like, hey, do you want to talk to Christian? Because he's committing to Carolina in 30 minutes, Christian Keeley. And, you know, I had been talking to people, we knew that he was probably going to commit to Carolina. But at the time, he said he was going to wait until like Mother's Day. And so I have my IC laptop with me. However, the battery wasn't working. So I run to my car, I get the charger, I go into the hallway and sit on the hard floor. I'm on the phone with Ben over here, you know, talking to him, giving him updates. I've got my full-time job phone over here. I'm looking stuff up, like stats and everything. Then I'm on Slack talking to Michelle, saying, hey, can you help me get this story prepped? And then I talk to Christian and do the interview and type everything on the floor while an AU game is going on. So that's just, I mean, there are so many examples of that where, you know, Ben will text me and he'll be like, hey, I'm going to go take a shower because blah, blah, blah. And if anything happens, let me know. And he comes back and I'll be like, yeah, kid committed. And we talk to him and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that stuff happens a lot more than people think.
That's why whenever people ask me about commits or recruits, I'm like, I get all my information from Rel. He's the best in the business. He's covering this. He's got his feet on the ground. I would just be guessing and giving an ill-informed opinion. So I send everybody their way when it comes to recruiting. But getting back to the superlatives, who would you say was the worst-kept secret commitment?
Isaiah Hicks. Yeah. And it's not because he announced that, you know, he announced like, hey, I'm going to let y'all know my decision in a few weeks. And these are the schools I'm looking at. And the final list with a whole bunch of schools he wasn't interested in. We interviewed him in May 2001. It was the first year. There's a thing called the Tournament of Champions that used to happen at Carolina. It was a huge deal. It was split between Carolina, NC State, and Duke. And hundreds of AAU teams and literally thousands of players would come to the Triangle. It was a chance to see all the top talent. Like, we saw Amari Stoudemire there. That was the first time we saw him play. Excuse me, Ray Felton had like an infamous game there against a whole bunch of Division I players. Anyway, so this is the first year that had become kind of a lesser of a big deal. And I'm talking to Isaiah because he's a rising sophomore, I think, at the time. And we're like, you know, what schools are you interested in? And he's like, I want to go to Carolina. And we're like, are you sure? It's like, do you really want to say that? Because a lot of times kids have to realize that coaches see this stuff too. So in the chance that North Carolina didn't recruit him, then it might be hard for him to get other offers because they would assume that, hey, if this kid gets a Carolina offer, he's gone. But he was like, no, you can say it. You can write that. I'll go to Carolina. He was like, if you can't go to Carolina, you know, maybe I'll go to NC State or something, but I want to go to Carolina. It's the only place I want to go. And I guess it was that August he took an official, unofficial visit to UNC. He talked to Coach Williams. He got the offer. He got in the car. And he was like, I want to do this. And he called me about, I guess, about an hour and a half later and was like, I just committed. So it was a done deal that quickly.
Oh, I know Isaiah. So him saying, I just committed might have been the only words he said on that call to you, right?
it took about 40 questions, but we got enough for a story out of him. I was living in Hickory at the time. I was in my apartment and I was just like, I'm going to have to ask him 40 questions to get a story out of this. So that was fun. Yeah.
Who gets the superlative for most hype coming in?
Oh man. I will give you more than one answer again, just because there's so many players, but I think Harrison Barnes still has to be number one, simply because he came on the heels of North Carolina winning the national championship. The 2009-10 season hadn't happened yet. So North Carolina was, you know, just sky high. They won the title. They dominated, you know, Duke. I'm putting, again, for people who can't see, I'm putting in the air quotations. Duke was struggling on the recruiting trail. You know, it seemed like North Carolina had passed Duke. So he had that part going for it, and they beat Duke straight up for him. And then I think he was maybe one of the first freshmen or first couple of freshmen to be named preseason first team All-American. So yeah, that going for it. And then, you know, eventually you had a team that struggled that 2009-10 season. So him, Kendall, and Reggie were kind of seen as the saviors. you know, for North Carolina basketball after that terrible season, you know, going to the NIT and everything. So I think the combination of all that puts him number one. I would say Cole is probably a close number two, simply because of the way the roster turned out last year, losing Kobe and losing the Sierra and then losing the two seniors and Cam Johnson as a grad transfer. You know, you lose so much. It was inevitable that he was going to have to shoulder a huge burden for the team. I think between that, between being Cole, Greg Anthony's son, between kind of the Instagram culture that we have now, which wasn't quite as present when Harrison Barnes came in, I think all that makes him a very close number two.
That's who I was thinking you would go with, Cole, just that Instagram culture that you had mentioned. But this is the one where we could talk about someone that didn't go to UNC. Who is the one that got away, for, in your opinion?
So there are a couple. I'm going to go off the board a little bit. So the two people always go to are Delvon Rowe, who allegedly – I won't say allegedly. He did commit to Carolina kind of in confidence and then changed his mind and went to Michigan State. And then Brandon Ingram, who visited Carolina – he probably visited Carolina more than I did, and I lived there for 4 years. He was on campus all the time. And, you know, he's from Kinston, so it was just kind of assumed that he was going to go there. And so those two are who people immediately think of. I'll go off the board, same class, 2015, and go with P.J. Dozier. Maybe not a name everybody remembers. He ended up going to South Carolina, and maybe there were some other reasons he ended up at South Carolina. But for the longest time, talking to people close to him, it was Carolina's in good shape. We love UNC. We think that's where he's going to go. Great school. He fits in there. They're recruiting him hard. Even after a torn ACL, even after all the injuries, they really want him. He's going to go there. If you look, if anyone is bored enough to go back and look at kind of the PJ Dozier coverage, you can see kind of how much the people around him liked UNC because they were giving us a lot of the so-called scoops. Like we had his official visit list before anyone. We had his school list before anyone because they were kind of feeding it to us because I think they really liked Carolina. And then sometime around August of his senior year or entering his senior year, something changed and they went from the presumptive favorite to out of it and him choosing between Louisville and South Carolina. So I'll go PJ Dozier just for someone different because whenever you ask that question, it's always goes back to Delvon Rowe and Brandon Ingram typically.
Can I give you another name where I'm kind of curious what you think happened in that situation or if he's somebody that got was in the boat and kind of got out?
Sure.
I think from that class too, the 2015 class, Jaylen Brown. I remember seeing Jaylen Brown around on campus and thinking like, this guy's having fun. I think he's coming to Carolina. The scoop that I was getting from players on the team that were hosting him or having him around were like, this kid's coming to Carolina. And then commitment comes and he's gone all the way to Cal.
Yeah, that's interesting that he went all the way to Cal, a kid from Atlanta, to play for a program not really renowned nationally. And in the past, he's talked about how much he loved Roy Williams and loved his visit to Carolina. That is an interesting question.
That's it.
That's all I got. It's a good question. It's a really good question.
All right. I've got two more superlatives in the overall categories. And this one is one I'm curious, really curious to get your opinion on. The diamond in the rough, the person who you thought wasn't getting the hype that they deserved.
Diamond in the rough, the person that, oh man. Full disclosure, I had these questions beforehand, but I thought it wouldn't be great to kind of like look too deep into it so I could give real answers. And that one's hard, man. Just because of the way his career went, my mind automatically goes to Luke May just because of how his career went. But at the time, I don't think he was, you know, vastly underrated or anything. Mm. Man, I'm going to have to fill time here for a second while I think. I'll go Reggie Bullock because I've always been a fan of his, and I just think because he blended, and I don't use blended in a negative term, but because he was able to play with people and play multiple styles, that people sometimes forgot about him because he wasn't a takeover athlete who could just jump over people. You know, he's more of a smooth skill type player. I think people forget just how good he was even in high school. Just like the perfect, if I could play basketball and be 6'7" and say, they would say, hey, who do you want to shoot like? I'd be like Reggie Bullock. It just, to me, his form is just so pure and so great. And because he didn't stay for his senior season, I think people forget about him a little bit. He gets lost. But I mean, you're talking about even like the top 20 type recruit, I still think he's kind of forgotten a little bit about how good he really was.
Yeah, there's a reason he's still in the league.
Yeah, but yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Luke May, because I want to get your opinion on this. Is Luke May considered a walk-on? I love Luke May, but this is somebody who gets the term walk-on thrown around. It sounded like he was promised a scholarship no matter what, and then one opened up and he was able to take it. Like, eventually he was going to be put on scholarship, right? Does he count as a walk-on?
So, fact, when he committed to North Carolina, he did not have a scholarship to North Carolina. So if you want to say, okay, that makes him a walk-on, then that's fine. When he played his first game in North Carolina, he was on scholarship. So I guess it just depends on when you go. Because maybe it was that January or February, there was the whole thing about how Roy Williams called him and was like, hey, I just saved your mom, you know, $25,000 or something. How do you think they're going to spend that money? But I think it depends on when you want to take it from. When he committed, he committed as a walk-on. When he entered Carolina, he was on scholarship all 4 years.
This is one where I'll have to ask him. If he wants to be considered team walk-on, we'll let him carry our flag.
And if he is, he is the greatest walk-on of all time. And the dude had – I mean, he had offers from – people don't realize he had offers from, like, Gonzaga and Virginia and Clemson. And I think because the walk-on story has kind of been mythologized a little – I butchered that word – because the myth around the walk-on stuff has become so strong, I think people forget that he had those offers and that, you know, this is a top – you know, maybe not top 100 for most people for consensus, but top like 110 consensus, and then top 100 for a few services. So yeah, people forget that. But when he committed that October, he was a walk-on.
Who gets the superlative for best overall class?
Best overall class has to be 2006. I mean, just because, again, we're not talking about what they accomplished in college, even though you could put that up against anybody else too. But entering college, they had the number one point guard, the number one shooting guard, and the number one power forward. And that just hadn't been done in Carolina history. And not only that, you add in someone like Deion Thompson, who ended up being really talented players, all who were first round picks. Brandon Wright, I think, is the only lottery pick, but all were first round picks. And then you have Deion Thompson, who, you know, was a starter on a national championship team. So I think that was the best entering high school, just because of how dynamic, specifically Taiwan and Wayne and Brandon Wright were.
Looking at the hindsight categories, who outperformed your expectations?
We talked about Luke May already. You know, I'm Luke May's my guy, so I talk about him a lot. I'd say Marcus Page. I don't think anyone ever envisioned him becoming, a second team All-American as a sophomore. I don't think anyone ever envisioned him being UNC's all-time leader in three-pointers made. I don't think anyone ever envisioned him, even though he struggled that season, leading a North Carolina team to a tie game with a couple of seconds left in the national championship game. I don't think anybody really ever saw that. And not to go all historical on you, but, you know, he may be the most important recruit Williams has ever had. One, because of who he was and what time he came to Carolina. Like, it was really important to have that combination of someone with his particular demeanor at that time, when all the NCAA stuff was really, really starting to rage and the fire was starting to burn pretty hot. And then just because back then, I think this is early 2011 or 12, you know, Roy Williams offered another point guard in that class, LJ Rose, out of Texas, who played for Houston Hoops, the same program that produced Justice Winslow and Justin Jackson and, you know, a few other players. And Rose's career didn't quite turn out the way he wanted. He transferred multiple times, mostly because of injury. But there was a scenario, you know, if you believe in parallel universes, there's some universe where Marcus Page went to Iowa or to Missouri and LJ Rose went to Carolina. And maybe things are very different than what they are now. But getting Page to come in, and then, you know, the kid did not expect Kendall Marshall to go pro. I mean, nobody really did after his sophomore year. So then he comes in at 152 pounds, you know, 6 foot nothing, 150 pounds nothing, having to play in the ACC every night. And it was an adjustment for those first, I'd say, first half of the ACC season. And then he kind of picked it up from there. So I'd say Marcus Page.
Yeah, I love hearing him kind of talk about coming into college because, like you mentioned, he is always like, yeah, I was coming to learn from Kendall Marshall. I was coming in to back up Kendall Marshall, you know, play spot minutes, be a rotational guy. And then all of a sudden, Kendall declares, and he's like, I think I'm the starting point guard at North Carolina.
Like, do you remember his freshman year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was like he couldn't make anything. And Roy Williams kept telling reporters, like, this kid's a good shooter. He's a good shooter. I promise you he can shoot. He can shoot. He can shoot. He can shoot. And everybody's like, okay, they just lost to NC State at NC State by, like, 35 or whatever it was. Like, are you sure? And then right around that time, he started to come along. And then just how he steadied the program through everything it went through over the years. You know, it was rough there for North Carolina. You were there. It was rough for a few years because, you know, Roy Williams started to hear the stuff about how he was getting older and the game was passing him by. And they had lost 10 games or more in three straight seasons for like the first time ever. And the recruiting wasn't going as well as it was, you know, they wanted to. And it was just all this stuff surrounding the program with NCAA. Just everything was kind of coming down on them. And like, I feel like Marcus Paige like just steadied the ship and kept everything afloat until they could get reinforcements in 2014 and 2015. And, you know, you cannot understate his importance to where North Carolina basketball is now. Like, if there was ever an inflection point in the middle of the NCAA stuff, you would say when Marcus Paige committed, things started to go in a different direction.
I'm glad you mentioned my freshman and sophomore year at Carolina watching that team, because I remember at times I was like, I thought I signed up for Carolina basketball. What the heck is going
on? Iowa State was your first year or Villanova in the tournament?
My first year, hold on, let me stall to type. It was 2012-2013 UNC basketball schedule. I remember thinking –
I think that was Kansas. Kansas.
Yeah, that sounds right. But I remember they lost to at Indiana – like huge that year. They lost at Texas. There was at NC State, like you mentioned. And then I was just thinking, like, you know, what the heck is going on? They got swept by Duke, I'm pretty sure, that season.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, everybody's telling me how great it is to rush Franklin Street. I'm like, I don't know if this team's going to win. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that you think you were talking about the importance of Marcus to the program, because the category I wanted to end with, in hindsight, who do you think was the most important class? Like, you mentioned how important Marcus was, but do you think it's enough to push his class to be the most important class for all the classes that you've covered?
Not quite. I think the 2014 class is the most important, because as solid as the 2012 class was, and, you know, Bryce ended up being a first team All-American and Marcus a second team All-American. So it's kind of weird, because we're like, oh, they were solid. They were a good class. They came in, they were good triers. They tried really hard, but like, there's a first team All-American and a second team All-American in that class. But I think as good as they were, they needed that additional firepower and talent to kind of take them over the top. And 2014, Justin Jackson, Theo Pinson, and Joel Berry really were able to do that. And the fact that, you know, I go back to this all the time, but it still blows my mind. Between 2012, 2013, and 2014, the only seasons they lost from all those guys was JP Tokido turning pro a year early. Everybody else stayed all 4 years. Excuse me, Justin Jackson. So they lost 2 years. Justin Jackson left a year early, and JP Tokido left a year early. But between everybody else, they had all 4 years. And I think that group kind of stayed, like Marcus Paige, saw North Carolina through everything and eventually, you know, led them to a title. But I think 2014, just because it pushed the 2013 class, which was good in itself, and it pushed the 2012 class to be better, and then the parts started to fit together. So once they got to be sophomores and juniors, you saw how good, you know, they all were together. So I'll go 2014, just because of when it came, how it came. Joel Berry, you know, they had been a long time without a commitment when Joel Berry committed. And then Justin Jackson did it probably a month later. And then Theo Pinson did it maybe a couple months later. So it was all right there in a row. And they needed perimeter help, and they got it. And, you know, those guys did a wonderful job for the program.
And it's hard to argue that with the 2017 national championship and the fact that Carolina is – basically always in the top three, top four recruiting classes as teams now. But, Rel, I had so much fun talking to you today. I could listen to you talk about recruiting and recruiting stories. I might just have to come up with more superlatives so we could do this again, or come up with another topic so we could do this again. But I just wanted to say, you know, thank you so much for taking the time and talking with me.
Yeah, man, of course. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It's good to think about some of those things. There's now everything's starting to come to me, of course, when we're done. I'm like, oh yeah, there was this guy and this guy. But yeah, definitely fun. I enjoyed it, man.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.